Welcome to the Connected Insurance Podcast, presented by Agency Revolution. Listen to interviews with the most influential people in the insurance industry. Learn the most important strategies, tactics, trends, and challenges facing today's independent insurance agents and brokers. New episodes every Wednesday. Visit agencyrevolution.com and click media to explore the Connected Insurance family of resources for insurance agents and brokers. Subscribe today and get updates delivered right to your inbox. And now, without further delay, the Connected Insurance Podcast.
Hello, everybody. Michael Janz, co-founder of Agency Revolution, where we automate your systems, engage your customers, and help you grow your agency. And I want to welcome you to this episode of the Connected Insurance Podcast, where it's our job to find the geniuses, innovators, movers, and shakers in the insurance industry and to discern and deconstruct what they do to help you grow your agency faster. This is a special podcast in as much as I'm interviewing myself, in a sense, which, by the way, is harder to do than talking to somebody else. But I've got something that I want to share, and I have thought a lot about it. I've thought deeply about it, and I've attempted to make sense out of what's happening in the insurance industry today and what that means to the independent insurance agency of today, and strategically what they should do to win. About this time every year, for several years, I've created a state of the industry report. The first version you're getting in this podcast, I do have a written version that will be coming out very shortly. If you'd like an advanced copy, let me know. Michael@agencyrevolution.com. Send me an email and say state of the industry. Thank you for all of those of you who requested a pre-galley copy of my book. You got it with typos and everything, but that was the deal, free. We will be going to the digital press with that fairly shortly. If you'd like an advanced copy of my State of the Industry report, let me know. Just send me an email, michael@agencyrevolution.com, and simply say, can I have a copy of your State of the Industry report? I'll be happy to send it to you. So, without further ado, I will introduce myself, Michael Janz, and invite you to engage in this part of the conversation with me. Thanks so much for joining me. Here I am. Hello, this is Michael Janz, and my guest today is me, a much more daunting interview process than I normally have to deal with. I'm delivering to you my insights on what's happening in the insurance industry right now. I have interviewed in the past year, since I do this virtually every single week, 52 of the most interesting people in the insurance industry. And what am I going to do with that information? Well, usually every year around this time of the year, I like to step back, assess what's happening, and take all of that information and take the best of the conversations that I've had and synthesize what I think is the most important content that my listeners should be paying attention to. So I am quite sure that I'm not going to be able to deliver all of my thoughts in one brief podcast, so I very, very likely will break this into two. But for 2018, this more or less is the first part. Part one, State of the Industry 2018, what I tentatively call the death of the old school agency, the rise of the new marketing master, and how industry leaders now are harnessing the power of the very trends that are hurting other agencies and delivering innovation and world-class marketing to earn the hearts and the wallets of today's connected consumer. So, no surprise to you, I'm sure, that most agents, most carriers, most industry pundits, most observers, most analysts would say The rumble of change is underfoot. Now, I know that we've heard that for quite a while, but we're going to be digging into that in a little more detail in this conversation. It's generally very widely concurred. This is a time of change. Not just a time of change for insurance agents, not just a time of change for the insurance industry, but we are nested, obviously, in a much broader global economy. Our consumers are changing, the industry is changing, and we need to respond. This isn't new for insurance agents. Those of us who have been around for a while, we know, we've seen it before. Nonetheless, agents of all generations now, boomers, Gen Xers, millennials could very easily say, it's not my dad's insurance agency anymore. After all, the average agency of today really doesn't look like its counterpart from a generation or two ago. I know because at least one generation ago, I was in this industry and I have seen a change. Over the years, we've seen agencies transform very successfully from what many would consider to be mere pass-through sales organizations to very professional businesses with many of the systems and processes and technologies that are indicative of a successful business. They've adopted management systems, various communication technologies, and many have done their best to chase the professional standards of industry best practices. And yet agencies of all sizes and levels of maturity have declared some bewilderment at the sheer pace and the nature of change demanded of them today, such that they could just as easily declare, but it's not my dad's industry either. A number of my own clients are declaring that what's familiar is disappearing. What used to work doesn't work. So how do we prepare for that? Incoming generations today might rightfully feel some pride as they assume leadership. After all, it's good to finally be in control, but all too often they present to me a nagging sense that given the topsy-turvy pace of change in today's world, they just may not be in control at all. So, what is happening that's giving some agencies some sense of bewilderment or anxiety? Is the gap? This may be the fundamental question. Is the gap between agency performance and consumer expectation too big for this industry to jump? Spoiler alert, I don't think that it is, but also spoiler alert, I'm not certain that every agency is going to make that jump. Whatever generation they represent, alert agents today are declaring some vexing anxiety that the gap between agency behavior and what their own customers expect, what new prospects and new customers expect and demand, it's a big gap and getting bigger. Further, because of all this change, there seems to be some sense that the dark mysteries that might lie around the corner, like changes in technology, changes in consumer behavior, changes in competition, might hold some nasty surprises that the independent agency channel simply isn't prepared for. It's possible that both the nature and the speed of the changes and of these trends represents a new form of threat, which many agencies simply aren't prepared for. So I have to ask, are the challenges of today really fundamentally different than the challenges of earlier eras? Surely that has been true for some other industries. We've seen some industries who have in the past successfully overcome challenges. We have seen them change or get changed radically. It's worth remembering that this isn't the first possible phase change that the insurance industry has, suffered. Again, I've been in the industry for a long time. In the early 1980s, industry observers generally estimated that the number of independent agencies was roughly as high as 80,000, a number that afterwards fairly quickly shriveled to about 40,000. What happened then? And then to our best analysis, while that number's deteriorated a little bit, not much, nothing like that transition, that massive transition that we saw earlier. What happened then? Well, a lot of agents simply weren't prepared for some of the forces and trends that were pressing down on the industry then. They weren't able to negotiate their way through that, so they sold out or they merged, which was very common, or some of them just played out their tail. Many were just not interested in adopting, learning, and mastering the new technologies of the day, like agency management systems, and many of them simply weren't able to endure the long, soft market of the 1980s. So how do we prepare for change, and how do we avoid going down the wrong road? Inspired by a $40 late fee for an overdue video, Reed Hastings started Netflix in 1997. Blockbuster chose not to react. After all, it was the 800-pound gorilla in its field. Its 2003 revenues. By the way, that wasn't that long ago. Their revenues topped $5 billion. In 2008, Jim Keyes, Blockbuster's CEO, famously declared that Netflix is, quote, not even on our radar as a competitor. By the time Blockbuster chose to react, it was too late. In 2010, they declared bankruptcy. How could they have saved themselves? So this is the critical point. How could they have saved themselves? Not with tactics. More stores, more movies, more selection, more discounts, more of the same. Netflix beat Blockbuster with strategy. And Blockbuster could only have beat Netflix with their own strategy by knowing what trends to pay attention to and intelligently reacting to them and reacting to them on time. Strategy guides tactics. Strategy aligns every behavior, action, and task. So they all go in the same direction. Minimal waste, maximum output, as Richard Rumalt stated in Good Strategy, Bad Strategy. By the way, terrific book. So if strategy interests you, I recommend it. He said, good strategy works by focusing energy and resources on one or a very few pivotal objectives whose accomplishment will lead to a cascade of favorable outcomes, which sounds like magic, but that's the essence of what good strategy does. It allows you to align all of the tactics, all of the behaviors, all of the things that a CSR might say to a customer, to a prospect, everything in an agency aligns them all going in the same direction. And then if, in fact, we align them in the right direction, then we get this cascade of favorable outcomes. And by the way, that happens to be the very purpose of my conversation with you right now. In other words, good strategy creates leverage, the ability to gain such measurable advantage that you generate higher results. You generate higher output with lesser equal expense. So you uncover what's happening, to assess what's happening in the world right now, it does require stepping back. It requires withdrawing from the demands of the day, which is an almost overwhelming requirement when the demands of the day are themselves overwhelming. So an agent, most agency principals will show up to work on a Monday or Tuesday or through Friday with a full list of things to do. In fact, my most successful clients don't. have a full list of things to do, so they do have the opportunity to build systems to assess what's happening. But most show up with plenty to do. And so it's difficult to take that time to step back and assess, hey, what's happening out there in the real world, and what do I need to do about it? And as industry forces become turbulent, strategy especially separates the winners from the losers. And when those powerful and sometimes mysterious forces of the world that we live in, when we understand them, only then can we trust that we can use them to our advantage or ride the waves of those forces. And those are the very forces that will overwhelm those who are unprepared. These are the same forces that are influencing your customers and marketplace. These are the same forces that are encouraging your competitors. These are the same forces that are guiding the very strategic decision that your carriers are considering and making in boardrooms and executive sessions. And these are the same forces that the investors and the insurtech startups bank on when they gamble on their innovation and they gamble against your innovation. So what are the forces that are so powerful that they just can't be ignored? The ones that need to be obeyed, or the ones that need to be harnessed. After all, agencies across North America have gone a little bit willy-nilly around something. We've seen for years now, trade magazines and the carrier representatives, a lot of insurance marketing gurus, and many people would say myself, that we need to go digital or die. Well, let's talk about that for a moment. Digital marketing is not strategy. After all, agencies across North America have in many cases gone sort of willy-nilly with wasteful and unproductive digital marketing efforts. Digital marketing is critical. Digital marketing is intelligent, but it's not strategy. Rather, digital marketing has to be nested within strategy, or more precisely, digital marketing needs to be nested in a broader marketing strategy, and the marketing strategy needs to be nested in strategy itself, which is the overarching direction of the entire agency. So, I have identified four forces that I do believe meet the definition of being so powerful that we have to pay attention to them, and we have to obey what they're telling us and harness them and use them to our advantage. I'm going to share two of those with you today. I also have two others that get honorable mention, and I'll bring them up in part two as well. It's a difficult challenge to figure out what we need to pay attention to, because the list of changes, the list of forces, the list of trends, it could be ad nauseum and go on forever, but that would render that entire list meaningless. So I think the most arduous challenge facing the strategist, or the two most arduous challenges facing the strategist, are one, first, assessing the many to determine the few. The forces of change really are diverse, they're numerous, and sometimes they're occasionally hard to find. Sometimes they hide. The strategist needs sufficient knowledge in both the narrow insurance vertical, and they need to know what's happening in the broader global worlds. And out of that morass of possible things that you absolutely must pay attention to, the strategist must determine those that meet the very highest level of importance. And then, second, they need to be able to wisely interpret the appropriate course of action. Otherwise, what's the use of knowing what's going on? So any responsible strategic analysis has to ultimately deliver a so what. It has to deliver a suggested course of action that is most likely to deliver what Richard Rumalt called that K cascade of favorable outcomes. So, as I have said, I've been in the industry for about 25 years, and I have a very practical bias. I want to know what's happening in the world, but not just so that, not to satisfy some intellectual curiosity, but so I can, to the best of my ability, synthesize it, present it, package it in a way that makes sense, and along with that, assess from that, what does that suggest to us about what agencies need to do today? So, purpose of my conversation with you today is to assess those very forces. I'm going to start it. Like I said, I've identified four. I'm going to share with you two and to suggest a strategic course of action for the independent agency channel. It's presented even more so than in years past, and I have delivered a state of the industry report for many years. I deliver more so than ever with a sense of urgency, which I think is indicated by the very power and the speed with which these forces are moving. So, 101, examine the most powerful trends that we have to pay attention to that are affecting us, our channel, and ideally arm agencies with a strategic framework to meet and surmount the challenges presented by those trends and forces. And it is provided with the hope that it will guide and align or help align your team on a clear path to success, that it will offer a sensible and effective outline for the allocation of marketing resources, in part because I'm simply, tired of seeing agents want to make a change so bad, but so unfortunately go willy-nilly, helter-skelter, trying things that they shouldn't do. And maybe they do them because somebody said, here's a tactic, here's a shiny new thing. But just because something is a shiny new thing doesn't mean we need to go chase it. And I want to encourage agents to maintain an appropriate sense of urgency while removing the inherent distractions of anxiety. Yes, there's anxiety. Let's get rid of that. It's not going to do us any good. A little, maybe a little bit, as Andy Grove said, only the paranoid survive. But anxiety has a way of paralyzing people or encouraging people to make bad decisions. Urgency has a way of keeping us focused. So, as I mentioned, I've identified four forces with two honorable mentions, so six altogether. I'm going to talk about two today, and then I think we'll probably finish it up probably next week. So, here's what my research has identified. Again, the first two. One, force number one, the accelerated digitization of the connected economy. The economy's connected. Everything has changed from when it wasn't. And that includes its impact on consumer behavior, its impact on competition, and its impact on existing industry players. And number two, the growing pressures of existing and emerging competition, including new entrants that were previously non-existent. Those are the first two. All four of them. I know I'm making this a little bit of a cliffhanger by holding off the other two until the next conversation, but it makes the most sense to me. All four of these forces don't exist in isolation. They actually weave together. They overlap. They support each other. And in some cases, they actually accelerate each other. And as a whole, I think they're not a surprise. Most agents do hear about them. They read about them. And they often experience them. So let's look at the first two. Trend number one, the accelerated digitization of the connected economy, including its impact on consumer behavior, competition, and existing industry players. This is self-evident, more than likely. Somewhere in a pocket, a purse, within arm's reach, you have a smartphone. You have a computer on your desk. You likely have a tablet at home or in your briefcase and so on and so on and so on. The list of industries that have been genuinely disrupted by the confluence of new technologies and the consumer's willingness to consume those technologies is endless. The internet and its related technologies have changed everything because, among other things, they have reversed the balance of power. Consumers come to the table armed. The accuracy or breadth of their information notwithstanding. So yeah, maybe they're wrong, but they have access to an infinite amount of information. They have access to it anywhere. They have access to it instantaneously. As every car dealer will tell you, or as you probably know if you've purchased a car. But they don't wait to use that information in negotiations. They use it to choose with whom they will even negotiate to do business with. They won't merely visit your website, which, by the way, they will do just to check you out. They will see your reviews, and they will know what the world is saying about you. 81% of consumers research online before they shop. 88% of consumers trust online reviews as much as they trust the recommendation of friends or family. 65% read between 4 and 52 or more reviews before making purchasing decisions. 98.4% of consumers check their email at least once per day. 39% check their email between 10 times and throughout the day, which is somewhere around infinity. The average consumer actively uses their smartphone 145 minutes a day. They'll consume or deliver information on their smartphone 76 times per day with a stunning, get this one, 2,617 discrete touches, swipes, clicks, and taps. 2,617. 79% of American adult internet users use Facebook, and baby boomers are actually online more than millennials. So I'm not just talking about the millennial generation. I'm talking about everybody in North America. Boomers, one report claims boomers are online 15 hours a week. Another report indicates that the average U.S. adult spends 87 hours simply browsing on their smartphone. It is a connected world. Today's consumer belongs to those who will connect with them and do so meaningfully. Other industries, those who got connected before the slow-moving insurance industry, they have set new standards, and the consumer understands those standards and is beginning to expect those standards. Consumers increasingly expect their dollars to be rewarded with connections that matter. It's elevated the game of advertising and marketing. Consumers resent interruption advertising, old school advertising. They resent self-praise like, we've been in business since 1937, so what's in it for me? They don't pay attention to the platitudes of integrity, service, and trust. In order to achieve maximum growth and profitability, agencies can't fall back on yesterday's strategies. Like chase better customers isn't even enough. Today, when customers are chased, they run. Today's agency must attract their customers, and more important, they must guide those customers through an extensive, well-thought-out, and meaningful customer journey, one that is designed to deepen and extend that relationship by, number one, connecting with meaning by delivering an ongoing stream of genuine value above and beyond the sale of the product. And number two, connecting with delight by connecting as humans, both in the offline agency culture and behavior and through the masterful use of online content. They need to guide that sequential customer journey from new lead to new customer to open claims, closed claims, account renewal, and more. Customers have moments of truth where they actually have an insurance experience, and that's the time when we need to be there. We need to be present with them. And as I said, we need to connect with them meaningfully with value, and we need to connect to them with delight as humans. Other competitive channels are attempting to do just that. In fact, probably every competitive channel to the independent agency system is attempting to do just that. We need to as well, but we have to do it in our own way. A unique differentiator of the agency channel is the real people and real communities that other channels lack. The masterful marketers use online technologies to scale that strength and to demonstrate the care and expertise of the real people that we are and the real people on our team. What's the strategic response to the connected economy? Agents have to adopt and master. I use that word on purpose. Investing in technologies is one thing. Using them effectively is another. We have to adopt and master the use of connecting technologies, not merely to attract new customers, but to achieve maximum customer lifetime value. The very threat that is posed by the internet and related technologies and the consumer's voracious adoption of those technologies actually embeds its own solution. Those technologies that our competitors are using, those technologies that our consumers are demanding, are the very technologies that make every agency a publisher. They make every agency and potentially an immediate source of meaning and delight in the consumer's medium of choice, the online technologies. And the masterful agency understands its customer base and creates and supplies, ideally, original content through that media. Closely related, as agencies embrace customer-connecting technologies, they should embrace technologies in general. As new technologies emerge and expand rapidly, savvy agencies, they have to be comfortable with technologies. So I encourage my clients to explore and experiment with those that enhance productivity, as well as those that further their content delivery goals. Trend number two. The progressive and impending rise of competitive insurance channels. Our channel doesn't act in a vacuum. Once upon a time, to some extent, if we go back long enough, it probably did. The agency channel was invented to fill a need for the carrier segment. What was the need? To connect with customers in the field and sell. As the economy and the sheer volume of insurance opportunities expanded, so did competitive channels, and so are competitive channels. Strategists will advise, however, against copycat strategies against those competitors. Not only will the copycat not stand out with unique differentiation, but a strategy that is stolen from a different channel won't work. They will be better at a channel that is appropriately designed for their channel. They'll be better at it. Strategies that work well for a distinct channel work for that channel because they are distinct. Successful competitors succeed because they executed on a strategy that was most appropriate for their business model or their value proposition. And this runs counter to the common temptation. We see a competitor do X and succeed, So we think if we do X, we'll succeed. So for example, agency Geico sell on price. And I can't begin to tell you how many times I've seen agency marketing attempting to sell on price. Well, gosh, we've heard Geico or Progressive Direct say and connect price to insurance so much that it, in the consumer's mind, it almost makes it a commodity. Agents seem like they've been as influenced by that as consumers. Good strategy is based on the intersection of the needs and desires of a marketplace segment and the inherent strength of the competitive entity. The dramatic growth in the direct competitors, the direct channel, like Geico and Progressive Direct and Personal Lines, can be attributed to the successful execution of a focused strategy, which is, in their case, to offer to sell insurance for less. That's an appropriate strategy for that channel. They have core efficiencies built into the model that allow it to operate at a lower combined ratio and funnel massive investments into advertising. You might be thinking, is it heresy for me to proclaim that the independent agency channel isn't as efficient as the direct marketers? No, not a bit, not at all. I'm not minimizing the importance of efficiency, but efficiency is not sacred. It's useful. It shaves points off of the expense side of the P&L. But most breakthroughs in industry are not based on efficiency. They're based on innovations in value. And of course, the direct channel has to be more efficient. They have the inherent advantage of a single series of business disciplines. One carrier, one set of scripts for all the thousands of employees in cubicles answering phones on an 800 number, one strategy, one execution, and limited products. That's a channel that is designed for efficiency. Compare that to the possible energy and the innovation and maybe the inefficiencies of 40,000 different entrepreneurs representing some thousands of carriers and some tens of thousands of products. No, the agency channel has its own built-in strengths, and that's what we should build upon. Real people and real communities providing the peace of mind that comes from human relationships delivering advice and advocacy. And that is worth something, and apparently a lot. Bain & Company's research demonstrates that the agency channel is uniquely suited to earning customer loyalty and that a loyal insurance customer measured by a Net Promoter Score delivers a whopping 7 times the lifetime value of a low loyalty customer and 3 times the value of a neutral customer. 7 times, not 7% more, not 70% more, 700% more lifetime value in a customer relationship. How do they do that? Well, if we earn their loyalty, here's what they're willing to do for us. They're willing to buy about 25% more insurance. They'll consolidate almost 90% of their insurance with one provider. They'll retain at a whopping 97%. And they refer 250% more friends and colleagues, then neutral customers. And of course, low loyalty customers don't send us referrals. They send us complaints or they give us bad Google reviews. This sense of relationship, this tribal connectedness, the sense of being there as a real person is the essential promise of the agency channel. But apparently, bad news, we're not delivering on it. According to Ernst Young's Global Customer Survey, a sobering 86% of insurance consumers are not very satisfied with communications from their provider. Well, no wonder. 44% of insurance consumers don't remember getting any communications from their insurance provider in the last 18 months. So there's a perception they haven't had a claim. All the industry does is take things away. But the direct channel isn't the only threat. Venture capital can't overlook the billions of dollars flowing through the industry and has risked over $4 billion in investments in the last few years trying to get its hands on some of it. McKinsey's research shows that more of those investments have gone into P&C than either life or health insurance, and that of five different categories where that money is being invested in P&C, more has been directed to insurance distribution than any of the other four other categories. Well, what business are we in as independent insurance agents? The distribution of property and casualty. So what does this mean to the retail agent? I think it means that we need to hyper-focus on our inherent strength more than ever before and not willy-nilly chase the value propositions of any other channel, that we should pursue the customers that are most pertinent to our channel. There are a lot of them. And as I'll cover in our next conversation, I'll show you where some of them are, and it might surprise you. There are a lot of them. And not only should we pursue relationships with them, but we should earn their loyalty. And they're willing to give us that loyalty. And as I mentioned a moment ago, they will reward us, not only with their hearts, but they'll reward us with their wallets as well. One could conceivably argue that every channel has their own strength. I think they do. Bain's research demonstrates that consumers are primarily motivated to purchase insurance because of one of three compelling values that they hold: price, or convenience, or peace of mind. I think we could reasonably argue that the direct marketers own the price value. Well, guess what? They're willing to pay 50% more than the agency channel to acquire them. And their customers churn at what you and I would think would be a stunningly high rate. But again, the efficiencies built into that model still make them an attractive customer for them. The agency channel can't afford to compete with them for that customer, nor, based on customer lifetime value, should we compete for them. Doesn't mean that we ignore price, but considerable research shows that it is not the primary value for our channel's customer base. Then we have the emerging digital channel, which we know because of the nature of the technology and a lot of our emerging competitors, they're delivering insurance and they're resolving claims with the click of a smartphone. They very likely will own the convenience value. As young and immature and undefined as the digital channel is, it presents a common problem. It presents a common promise and solves a problem that it will be there for the customer 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, that it'll be easy for the consumer to execute the action of their choice, able to bind insurance or open a claim, and that it will be fast. That's their value prop. But then we've got our channel, the agency channel. What do? Well, we should own the peace of mind value. We're the ones that can best deliver on that. Not only do the features of advice and advocacy appropriately belong to the agency channel, but their deep-rooted psychological values of tribal identity, of belonging, of having somebody on my side. And those are values that are best represented and best fulfilled by the agency channel. That notion, real people in my community or real people in my niche. That's the consumer value that delivers the highest customer lifetime value, and it's the segment that offers up the most assets to insure. There's plenty of money in that channel. And the money is in the relationship. So what's the strategic response to this, the progressive and impending rise of competitive insurance channels? Agents have to match their strength to the marketplace segment that will most richly reward them with maximum customer lifetime value. Those who most value peace of mind over the values of price and convenience. And again, I'm not saying that you should ignore price or that you should be or can be inconvenient. But we win by focusing. And as you recall, in Richard Rumalt's book, Good Strategy, Bad Strategy, ideally, if we focus on the right one or very few things, we'll have a cascade of positive benefits. In the four-stage A-Core marketing model, which I think a lot of you are probably familiar with, attract, convert, optimize, and retain. The four stages: attract somebody into my marketing funnel, convert them into a customer, optimize that relationship so that we can generate as many policies per customer, as much revenue per customer as we can, and retain that customer. In that four-stage model, we need to focus appropriate resources that earn the loyalty of the ideal customer. And that's in the deep end of the pool, folks. Generating leads. That's an important part of the system, clearly. The way we need to approach that is to make it as economical and as efficient as possible. We need to learn the tactics that are most effective in the digital world right now. And operate those as efficiently and effectively as possible. It's also, as every marketer knows, the single most expensive thing you can do in marketing. Spend money to get customers or spend money to get leads. Guess what? Leads don't give you any money back until you get to the second stage when you convert. And that costs money too, whether it's commissions or salaries and everything else in your budget that gets allocated. It takes time. And if the closing ratio is low, then they become very expensive. But then when we get to stage 3 and 4, and we begin to optimize those relationships and retain those relationships, that doesn't happen because it's transactional. It happens because it's relational. It happens because we have, in fact, earned the right. We have somehow made ourselves worthy of a relationship with the consumer, who then, after they have legitimately crossed the trust barrier, will come deep into a relationship with us. Care should be taken to attract the right kind of client. Don't attract the price shopper. Disqualify the price shopper. And pay attention to the niches and the classes of business that are most profitable and lucrative to you. And then guide the client through a sequential customer journey that is imbued with value and delight. You remember? Connect with them with value. Deliver content that's meaningful and delight. Deliver content that's human. And build relationships that are the kind of relationship that is so highly valued by this market segment. This element of strategy dovetails into the concept presented in the previous section. The only economically feasible way to scale this kind of relationship building is through the very connecting technologies that we spoke about a few minutes ago that today's consumer uses and expects of their vendors. So as I said at the beginning of this conversation, these forces weave together, work together, sometimes push each other along and accelerate each other. But the strategic response, the responses to each of these weave together, work together, push each other along. Agents have to master the technologies and deliver appropriate content at the right time to each customer in order to guide their journey toward full protection and loyalty. That notion of full protection should be in the DNA of the agency itself. Any customer who lacks full protection is unserved. You could conceivably argue that any customer who lacks full protection in your agency has been mistreated. If, in fact, the mission of the agency is to genuinely, authentically protect its customers. And I would argue vehemently that if, in fact, they should have full protection, which they should, it should all be in one place, and it should all be with you. Savvy agencies, they know their customers' values well. And as much as possible, they should deliver original content that best expresses the value of the agency in ways that are most meaningful to each customer. Contemporary marketing automation solutions integrated with agency management systems solves that problem and allows agencies to do it with scale. Those are the technologies that allow you to touch people with the right message at the right time and to deepen those relationships. So, we've talked about two trends: the digitization of the connected economy and the progressive rise of competitive challenges. And I've begun to talk about the strategic approach that I think you should wisely take to each of those. In the follow-up part of this conversation, I'm going to finish this overview. And then I promise I'm going to sum it all up and deliver to you in one hopefully concise, clear statement how I think the independent agency needs to behave strategically in an aligned direction that makes the most sense based on our strengths and the most sense based on what the ideal customer for this channel values the most. So, by the way, if you want to give me feedback on what I've said so far, would love to hear from you, michael@agencyrevolution.com. And if you've got anything that you'd like to add or agree or disagree, feel free to write me, michael@agencyrevolution.com. That is it for today. And as I said, I think if I did this entire verbal report in one section, it'd be too long. So I'm splitting it up, and we will hopefully, I think in a week, probably deliver the balance of it. I look forward to talking to you then. Thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you for listening to the Connected Insurance Podcast. If you found this episode informative, please share it with your peers and colleagues. Explore the Connected Insurance family of resources for insurance agents and brokers by visiting agencyrevolution.com and clicking media. Subscribe and get updates delivered right to your inbox. New episodes every Wednesday.